Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of September. Quinn Snyder taking pieces from other people's puzzles. Tabo Sefolosha, an offensive player? And how do the Jazz actually speed this thing up? We'll talk about those, plus take your questions on a Facebook Live edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning into the program today. Facebook Live Thursday brought to you by the Shamrock Auto Group, Rob Taylor and the crew down in Pleasant Grove. If you're looking for a used car, nearly new car, SUV, something that works in Utah County, Pleasant Grove, Shamrock Auto Group's the answer. Rob will help you out. I'll tell you a little bit more about them as the show goes on. If you are live on Facebook, you're one of like 12 people because we just started, but make sure you submit your questions. You can listen to this show on your iTunes, your Android, subscribe. You can listen to it on the Google, on the Alexa, on whatever it is. That's where they are in my house, if those Facebook Live. The Google's right there, and the Alexa's over there. I got them all, and now there's new ones to have after yesterday's announcement. So a bunch of stuff. We're through 2 days of two-a-days. Incredible. Joe Johnson participates in all of them. I was kind of surprised by that. I was impressed by that, frankly. I thought there was a real chance that he might take a day or two away, right? But no, 30-whatever-year-old Joe Johnson just powering through both two-a-day practices. They'll wait till noon today to get going. Yes, for those on Facebook Live, Leslie Knope, 2012 Cup. That's my political statement of the day. Actually, I do have a brief political statement today. Uh-oh. Don't worry. It's actually this. It's really simple. I listen to people talk about athletes all the time. And I tried to explain this to my wife and kids, and they didn't quite get what I was saying. So I may be describing this really terribly. And I hear all the time that these athletes are privileged to play a game. And I don't get it. So they're the 450 best basketball players in the world. The chances of making the NBA from high school basketball are about the same as getting struck by lightning. These guys have given up, if you're listening to the Get to Know interviews, they've given up every aspect of their life, no differently than Tom Cruise or Scarlett Johansson or any actor has, no differently than every CEO startup has in Silicon Valley, who works all hours of all days to start their company. And we never refer to them as privileged to play the game. It's as though because we played this game and sucked at it at some point in time, or were moderately good, or actually are just not very good but think we were great, or that we still wish we could play, that somehow it makes it so these athletes' work and effort at being the best in the world is somehow minimized by saying that these guys are privileged to play. That's bullcrap. And they're not privileged. They're awesome. They've busted their ass. They've worked endlessly. They have a limited time to make an earning. Tom Cruise is like 50 and still making $40 million for every movie. They're in the entertainment business. But I don't ever hear anyone – I hear athletes are thankful. I hear people win Emmys and they're thankful. But like one of our really good friends just won an Emmy for Veep. That's how I got – nope. He's busted his ass. He's working like 18-hour shifts with regularity to do these things. And to be an executive producer of a show of that quality. But we don't ever talk about him as being like privileged for doing, he busted his, but that's what our athletes are doing also. I don't get that aspect when people are talking about athletes that they are somehow privileged to be playing a game. No, they've busted their ass, given their career, have a limited earning space. They make a buttload of money. They are under incredible scrutiny. I'm not asking for a pity party for them. I thought Paul George was laughable in his interview with Sam Amick on kind of this issue. That's not what I'm asking for. But I don't understand in any way, shape, or form how these guys are privileged. All right? That's my take. It's kind of been pissing me off. I decided to bury it yesterday, but I had to say it today. And this is not necessarily a comment about the anthem stuff at all. I posted on my David Locke Facebook page a quote from Carmelo that I thought was totally incredible and I thought got back at the core issue of the anthem issue, and I posted it there, and it's the only political statement I'm making, and the only reason I'm not making political statements is because I don't have the guts to do it, which is a really, really terrifying place to be in our society, that I don't have the guts. I don't feel the freedom to be able to say what I think because I think it would have a negative impact on my career, maybe my company, maybe my family. And the fact that we've gotten to a point in our society in which we are muting the marketplace of conversation is a really, really scary place to be. Okay? It's a really scary place to be. What I just shared, that I won't share what I think's going on, and you may think you know, but I don't think you do know where my brain goes on some of these things, is a really, really terrifying place to be in a society. The fact that we're so siloed, that the minute, like the biggest bullcrap line I hear is, I don't want my politics in my sports. No, you don't want differing point of views that make you think in your sports. If somebody has the exact same point of view as you, you don't give a crap if it's in everything. And that's terrifying. That is so unhealthy for our society. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. We have to listen, we have to try to understand, we have to stop siloing points of view, and we have to allow people to have different points of view and not ostracize them, and not try to fire them, and not try to remove them from our lives. Welcome them, embrace them, listen to them, see what you can learn. The world is in a magnificent, wonderful, incredible place. And it has an incredible amount of points of view. If I grow up in Omaha, Nebraska, or I live in New York City, I have different experiences. If I'm an African-American, or if I'm a Caucasian, I have different experiences. My kids are half and half race. They're having a different experience. They don't know what they are. They have a different experience. They go to Japan and see Japanese people and wonder, am I that or am I this? They don't know. They're wondering. They could share thoughts. They could communicate to you. If we would just open up our ears and our hearts and our eyes to these things, we would be so much better off. I know it's a sports show. Sorry, that's been bubbling. And I'll be honest, I'm really disappointed in myself that I don't have enough guts to push through it. So that's my cop-out. I'm going to be loud and boisterous and say a lot and act like I'm involved when the truth is I'm a gutless SOB, intentional, and should be saying more than I am to support with a belief that people are good enough to listen, and I don't believe it. And that's really, really sad. This is my one life, and I don't have enough guts to do it. It's my one. We have brilliant minds all around, and we don't listen. Rachel Maddow is a genius. Bill O'Reilly, I know, fired. But Tucker Carlson, look at their backgrounds. Genius. Genius. David Brooks, genius. Paul Krugman, pretty close to genius. I don't agree with everything they say, but I'm certainly going to read what they write or listen to what they have to say or take in their information, they, it might be tilted. So hopefully I'm well enough read and smart enough to listen to all of it. Okay, I'm done. All right, let's go. All right, practice. What a weird transition. And since it's a weird transition, let me just do something on. Let's talk about our friend Rob Taylor. How's that? Rob Taylor brought in a bunch of guys to start a car dealership about 8-9 years ago. Brady and Kellen are two of the guys. Brady Kimball's is mechanic, who's now his general manager, who goes out and buys all the cars and makes sure he knows they're in great shape so that they can make sure they maintain the Google reviews that they have for you. And they're going to make sure you have an incredible experience. Kellen and Brady are there for you. I'll give you Rob's cell phone. Like, that's his deal. Like, this is a personal one-on-one experience. If you're looking for a nearly new car or slightly used car, he's going to get you, one, a car that he guarantees has great value, two, because of what I just told you. Like, his general manager's a former mechanic. Like, they can break it down for you. They specialize in the Suburbans and the Yukons and the Tahoes and the Utah County, like, assault vehicles, right? Like, you got it. You understand what they're doing down there in Pleasant Grove, and it's where you can save a great deal of money by going to Shamrock Auto Group. They're located in Pleasant Grove, 801-361-9796. The cool thing about Shamrock, like, they have people who come from out of state because what Rob and his crew do is so well done. They also have people that just call them up and say, I want this car, and they're willing to wait a week or two and they get it done. They'll take care of your experience top to bottom. Make sure it's easy. Go take a second and read their Google reviews. It's really stunning. Rob's number is 801-319-2250. 319-2250. If that's intimidating, call 801-361-9796. 801-361-9796. Check it out. Shamrock Auto Group. They're in Pleasant Grove. They are located at 203 North, 2000 West, North Utah County Boulevard, 801. Which one do you want? Rob's number, 801-319-2250. Practice has been really, really interesting, and I have to be a little careful. People always ask, you know, do you see practice? I do. I go to every practice. I try to be there for every minute I can for two reasons. One, I think it's my job, and two, I love it. Like, every single day I walk in the gym and I look around and I see, like, Jerry Sloan and Kevin O'Connor and Dennis Lindsay and the incredible staff that he's built and the coaches and the players, and I realize I'm in that room. I love it. So I try to not miss a single minute. To be given a front row seat to a season every year is so incredible. So I go all the time. I have to be careful because I can't break confidence. I can't. So I think you guys get that. And so Quinn made a really interesting comment yesterday that someone asked, like, how are you modeling this, trying to figure out how to score with two bigs? I mean, it's really difficult and different. And the Jazz are going to have to start every game, are going to have three non-shooters on the floor. Like, Ricky Rubio, I know we love him, but he's a non-shooter, okay? And, like, he's not going to suddenly shoot 45% from the field and 40% from three. Like, that doesn't happen. We can hope. I mean, his passing's unbelievable. There was a ball yesterday in a scrim, in a kind of a scrimmage type setting, in which someone threw a bad pass. It was going out of bounds. He was tightly guarded. He grabbed it, wrapped it around his back, swung it back up top to Gobert, who then rotated the other side for a bucket. There was no other human pass that Rubio could have made. Where the defender was, how the players were, he was falling out of bounds. And I'm not sure anybody else had the thought and the creative mind to make that pass. I mean, he's incredible, but he can't shoot. Okay, like he can't. He's not a good shooter, and that's not going to suddenly become 45-40. So Quinn Snyder's trying to figure out, how do I build an offense with three guys that are non-shooters, Gobert, Favors, and Rubio to start every game. And it's interesting to watch. I've seen him pick some things up that are very signature to me of Clipper stuff, which is a little different because Chris Paul could shoot, but it's the idea of Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan were generally non-shooters. I've seen him pick up a few things that I thought were Memphis Grizzly-esque, which were Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol stuff. He's put in some things on his own end that are pretty creative. He's run his natural offense and I think added some elements to it to try to expedite it so it happens a little faster. I think there's an area to some extent where the slower we get in the offense, the more of our non-shooting starts to get exposed. I'm not sure if that's going to be true, but I kind of get the vibe that if we, you know, we're going to have to make a lot of picks and a lot of actions, but boy, when you get a look, you better take it. Because you make that one extra pass, their defense probably is overshifting on us. So it's been in, Quinn said in the media session yesterday that he's taking these pieces. This is a theme I'm going to be with you all year. And basically, once they get exposed and they're out there and you can see them and they're on video and everybody, then I'll start sharing more of what they are. But it's been really fascinating to watch some of the plays that I'm a play junkie. I probably should do more of this. I don't have time, frankly, to add much more to my list. But I love plays. Like Zach Guthrie, Jazz assistant, will know that he gets texts from me all the time. Like, oh, inbound play at 1:23 left of the Memphis-Charlotte game. Like, I'll watch games. I just love plays. And so there's some cool stuff that the Jazz are putting together right now on that regard. One thing that's been interesting is the play of Tabo Sefolosha. He's not going to become an offensive player, but he's been more offensive than I anticipated. Yesterday's kind of scrimmage stuff, he had a little bit of a larger role offensively. Again, I think it's you know, I'm watching us try to search for these answers of how we're going to be like this, you know, what's going to break us through to the other side and become, I'm not saying that. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't averaged over 7 points a game in his career. I don't think he's going to average more than 7 points a game. But if you kind of look at last year in Atlanta, he did pick up his usage rate a little bit. And I think he went back and one year in Atlanta, he was at 15%. So I don't think he's just a non-offensive player. Last year, I think he was at 13%. That's pretty low usage rate. If you think everyone's equal, it's 20%. But there's just a little bit more to him offensively. He's not a great ball handler. And that gets for an interesting thing. I could make a pretty strong argument that I think we might be better off with Sefolosha as our starting three than Ingles. Not a criticism of Joe in any way, but when Rubio's going to be the primary ball handler in that lineup, so maybe you're better off having Sefolosha taking the defensive burden on the best player out there, wing player, and playing with Rubio. Now, in some ways, Sefolosha's only a 34.5% three-point shooter, which is pretty low for wing. We almost could go to four non-shooters. Let's just make the world impossible for Quinn. But I would also say, in the second unit, I don't think Donovan's really a point guard, and I'm not convinced Dante's really a point guard. So I might want Joe Ingles calming ball-handling force out on the floor. I also think that the best dribble penetration we're going to have with spacing to create open shots is that lineup with either Joe Johnson or Jonas Derebko as the four, and having Donovan and Dante pushing, kicking back out to Ingles, who's a better shooter than Sefolosha, might be a better answer. When Rodney, I think the offense with Rubio is going to be Rodney Hood and Favors and Gobert working around the rim, and that fifth piece is probably going to be a little lost. And Sefolosha as a wide open 3-point shooter is not, you know, he's okay. He's not great. He's not a 40% knockdown 3-point shooter like Derebko is. Like when Derebko's open, I think he's pretty deadly. Like the way that Joe Johnson is, the way that Joe Ingles is. So there's, you know, I can see the flip side. We're like, whoa, dude, I can't have a fourth non-shooter. But I could. I'm not saying, you know. Remember, one of my big mantras I talk to you guys about all the time is none of these decisions are 100-0. So I could make an argument. I'm not sure that argument is much more than 50-50 or maybe even 40-60. But, you know, Sefolosha last year was a 35% catch-and-shoot, 3-point shooter. That's not great. So it would be nice if he was a little better than that. But anyway, that's just a thought. I think the ball-handling aspect, the calming of having Dante and Donovan on the floor together, we'll see. AB is out there as well. We got to remember him in this rotation possibilities. He's been playing. I still think he's going to have to adjust his game at a pretty high level. And I'm really excited he's healthy. I'm not entirely sure what he's going to do. And also the other one I would say on, I don't know who's, you know, I'm assuming Joe Johnson's going to play some of the four and Derebko. I still think Derebko plays some five. I still think we see this lineup. Nobody else does. But Jarebko's not a great ball handler, nor is Sefolosha. Both of them are good passers, decent, but when they get into any traffic, that's not their strength. I mean, I kind of feel like on both of them, if they put it on the deck and they're moving to the rim and they don't get to the rim, it's not a great outcome. So that's worth kind of keeping an eye on in that regard. All right, we've been talking a lot about how we can speed up the offense. I was going to talk about this a little bit, but I'm going to save it for tomorrow because I went on that tirade and we're 17 minutes in. But it's an interesting kind of little note I want to get into about what your pieces after different types of plays and the variance in that. So I'll just tease this for tomorrow's show. But if you look at last year after made shots, Houston was the fastest team in the league after a made shot. They averaged using 16 seconds. And the slowest was Utah and Memphis at 18.5. So there's only a 2.5 second differential between what you do after a made shot. Now, on defensive rebounds, there's a 3 second differential. It goes from 11 to Utah last year at 14. That's where I actually think if you're going to speed up, you can get into it. And we'll get into that a little bit more tomorrow. We'll talk about that. It's an interesting numbers game there. But all right, I want to get to your questions and see what you have to say on the program today. So let me scan through this. How is Ricky Rubio looking so far in camp? He makes just wow passes. He's not gonna change who he is as a shooter. I mean, I'm not trying to be negative Nelly on that. I just think it's really unrealistic to suddenly ask him as a player who, you know, you look at Ricky Rubio's career and his shooting percentages have been from 3, 34, 29, 33, 26, 33, 31. Like, okay, if we can get that 33, that'd be great. Like, and to the positive level, in his 5-6 seasons in the NBA, in 3 of them, he's been 33. His field goal percentage is been 36, 36, 38, 36, 37, 40. All right, if we can get that 40, that'd be really good. The other aspect here that you kind of have to look at with him is when you look at his if I think we've talked about this, but so the issue with Ricky Rubio's shooting is obviously his outside shooting is not great, but it's really his rim finishing. And I'm going to pull this up. So Ricky Rubio, between 0 and 3 feet in each year of his career, give me 1 second so I can give you the league average on this. I think it's about 60%, but I want to make sure I'm right on this. And, of course, the computer slowed down. So let's give you – here we go. So the league average between 0 to 3 feet – is I have it somewhere else, but it's about 61%. Okay, so in the restricted area, that's the league average is 61%. Here are Rubio's shooting numbers inside 3 feet in his career: 49, 45, 49, 33, 52, 48. That's the issue. That's the item right there. Excuse me. If Rubio can shoot better at the rim, then he's actually, like last year, he was a great mid-range shooter. He shot 47% from 10 to 16 feet. He only took 6% of his, or 10% of his shots there. From 16 to 33%, he was 43%. Like, those are pretty good numbers. Like, you're running a pick and roll and he pulls up on those. That's, you know, they're not great. That's 0.8 and 0.9 points per possession. But if you're into the deep half court, that's basically where you are possession-wise. So that's not bad. It's his ability to finish at the rim that has to improve. But he looks, you know, he looks like Ricky Rubio. He throws some incredible passes in there. Both Weston and Tyler had that. Do you know if training staff is putting a lot of focus on Rubio's shooting? Yeah, I mean, they're working on it, but it kind of probably, you know, I'm sure they've been working on it. He's had 5 different coaches in 5 years. I'm sure a lot of people. Can you briefly explain the NCAA investigation scandal that's taking place and the effect it may have on the NBA? It's mammoth. Talking to people around the NBA world, they think it'll be the biggest sports story of the year. Talking to a friend of mine who knows nothing about the thing, but he has been involved in a FBI investigation for the last 10 years as a lead counsel for a company that was under FBI investigation. His comment is that the first people they get are simply to get them to roll and talk so they can get to the bigger issue. And the anytime a document says company one, there's company two, three, and four coming. And so company one is Adidas on this. This is going to change college recruiting as we know it. It's going to change college basketball as we know it. I don't know what the NCAA is going to do because they never want to go after any of their blue blood money makers, and their blue blood money makers are guilty as hell in this. College basketball is crazy corrupt. I have insane stories I could tell you on a regular basis. It's probably one level of my disdain for it. Division I athletics is completely corrupt in so many ways that's terrible, both for those money sports and non-money sports. It's not corrupt. It's misvalued because of the incredible burden on the coaches and the money that is out there to be made. So both the positive and the negative. And it's coming to light, and this is going to be mammoth, and people are terrified, and it'll be crazy to see what happens next. The most interesting comment somebody had to me was he thought, his comment was, I don't know how this entirely works, but I wonder if somebody makes a phone call at some point to the FBI and says, you better stop. Because if they don't, he had no idea where he stopped. He thinks it goes it could very well go international. That many of these international players come over to the U.S. They already have an agent. The agent has relationships with the schools and the shoe company. And there's money being exchanged hands for the international players when they come over prior. And that would be the next step in this. So it's big. Beyond big. Non-Jazz related question. Is it possible to do pre and post Melo trade pack projections for both the Knicks and OKC? I'm not convinced that Melo helps the Thunder more than... I did a little bit of it kind of briefly on the Locked On NBA podcast about the Melo trade. So if you want to go grab that, I would tell you, Mark. And I am hoping to put together pack for every team in the NBA with a projection of how possessions are going to be used. But I haven't gotten to that yet. I'm short on hours right now. Rodney Hood or Dante for most improved? Good question. So I think Dante has more. My quick thought is I think Dante has more room to improve, right? I mean, I'm not sure Dante was entirely an NBA player at all times last year, like viable rotation NBA player. Rodney will have more opportunity to improve, but I'm not. I mean, like, I was on with Spence and Gordon yesterday, and they had Rodney listed as the 11th best shooting guard in the NBA. I have a hard time wondering that he gets higher than that. He just might be a little better at it, but I don't think he gets higher. So I'm going to go Dante. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Brady. Justino. I'm talking about all of it. Tyson, thank you. Doug, I agree. This is really stimulating, isn't it? Who has looked the best so far in camp? It's a good question. Who has looked the best so far in camp? I like Royce O'Neal, but not like the best player, but he's a nice player. Who has looked the best so far in camp? I don't know that we've actually had the opportunity for that to happen. There hasn't really been like this full-out scrimmage kind of idea. I don't have an answer to that. And maybe that's the statement. There was a play where Dante goes in on an incredible drive to the basket. And, I mean, it was a great drive, and Rudy blocks it, and Ron's sitting next to me, and Ron's like, oh, no, you don't do that, you don't do that, you don't do that. But, like, who else in the NBA blocks that shot? So, to some extent, watching, one thing I don't know yet is, are we struggling in our settings offensively because of the fact we don't have any offensive players or because our defense is so good? Right now, our defense is ahead of our offense. So I think Rudy looks great because Rudy's the best player out there, but there hasn't been... Like, nobody's like, oh, my gosh, so-and-so's having this amazing camp. There's not. But I don't know that there also has been the environment for that either. How is Favors' three ball looking? I wouldn't have high hopes. I think that's, again, this is kind of this game we play this time of year that we keep trying to create different players than what they have been. But we actually have a roster where most guys, like Derek Favors, has been in the league and played 12,000 minutes and is 4 of 26 from 3. Do I think he's better than maybe 15%? Sure. Do I think he's going to transform into a three-point shooter having been 4 of 26 in his 12,000 minutes of his career? No, I don't. And also, watch, they're going so hard. Actually, my daughter asked, my daughter was in the media room yesterday. I was waiting to take her to her softball game while I was watching, and so she was working. And then I took her, and she asked me, Dad, if I got to see that, what would I notice about how professional athletes practice? Which I thought was a neat question from a 12-year-old. And I said, you'd notice how hard they work. Practice is really hard. And so guys aren't shooting well or making shots right now because they're tired. They've gone through two-a-days, and they're playing really hard. Does Mitchell's wingspan enable him to play the two despite being short? Seems like he'd be able to defend shooting guards just fine. Is the concern more about being able to shoot over taller twos? There are not – Avery Bradley is pretty much the only shooting guard in the NBA at Donovan Mitchell's size. So, you know, again, I'm a large sample size guy, and so – it's kind of the theme of the show today. So when you look around the league and you have a hard time finding 6'2", 6'3", shooting guards, that should be your concern. Now, Avery Bradley's pretty good, but that's probably the most likely comp on Donovan Mitchell, a 6'2", two-time All-NBA defensive team, 19th pick of the draft, who's 37% from three. I think Donovan can probably score better than that, but Avery Bradley's averaging 15, 16 points a game the last 2 years. So he's pretty good. Shot 39% from three. He had 6 rebounds a game at 6'3", like 6'2". I think trying to project Donovan Mitchell to anything more than Avery Bradley might be a really foolhardy. Avery Bradley's good. He had 6 boards a game last year. 2 assists, a steal. Effective field goal percentage of 53% when the league average is 50. Dude's good. So maybe, you know, again, you know, Gordon Hayward's going to have not the easiest time replacing Avery Bradley, frankly. Like, Gordon Hayward's better than Avery Bradley, but Avery Bradley's good. So, and he's got, you know, he's gotten better every year. So I think that's your model. That's what I would tell you. That's your model. And I think trying to stretch him beyond that is probably much. Today's show, as I mentioned earlier, brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group. I want to give them another shout out on the program. Shamrock Auto Group's a pretty neat spot. Rob Taylor, not Matchbox 20, Rob Thomas, and his crew, which it's a great story. Rob didn't like the way he saw inequality in the marketplace of buying nearly used cars and wanted to build it. And he went and got a mechanic as his GM so that when they're buying cars, they know exactly what they're getting. And in turn, they have built this place that has the most incredible Google reviews on a regular basis. People move from come from all across the country getting Rob to find them cars and getting his crew to do it. And they, in turn, have these great experiences. They pride themselves on getting you in and out and in making sure that you have a positive, easy, carefree experience. Go on your test drive, do all these things. And they have a great stock of cars that are purchased and set up all by, guys that know exactly what they're getting and so that they've taken care of the problem before it happens. They'll save you money. They'll give you a super nice experience. The buying experience will be quick and pleasant. Call 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. They specialize in Chrysler, Buick, Ford, Dodge, big SUVs. I liked this comment Rob said to me. It isn't a big deal if the customer doesn't buy from us. It is a big deal that we take care of the needs of our customer, and everyone at Shamrock will make sure we do that. It's good. It's kind of slogan of who they are. They've been in business for over 9 years. Check it out, Shamrock Auto Group. But also take a sec.com. Also take a second and look at their Google reviews. You understand. 203 North, 2000 West, North Utah County Boulevard in Pleasant Grove. All right, let's continue with the questions. Um, Thank you, Chris. Shout out back to you. And if you're always teaching, then thank you for your work with the kids. From Brandon Whiteside, we don't need to spread the floor. We're not the Warriors. I don't want to watch a brick show every night. Well, we do need to spread the floor because that's how you create space and create open looks. You have to spread the floor. On a scale of 1 to 10, how high are you on Donovan Mitchell? I'm not putting a number on him yet. I think he's a rookie. I think he'll when the floor's open and he gets to the rack, he's elite. It's really special. Now he's got to figure out how to jump off 1 foot because right now he's a 2 foot jumper, and that split second difference is a problem. So that's a big one that I think he's going to have to figure out. But I'm high on him. I think he's really good. I think he's going to force his way onto the floor. But I just kind of did that whole thing about Avery Bradley. I think that's fair. Who's on thinner ice to make the team, Ballenboy or O'Neal? We're so deep, I'm asking about the 15th spot. I like Royce O'Neal. I'll just say I don't want to say that I think Ballenboy's on thin ice. Got a guaranteed contract. I think that's unfair. I like Royce O'Neal. I think he's a nice basketball player. I don't know how good a shooter he is. I think if he could shoot, if he could shoot and his feet are a little narrow and he pushes back a little bit when he shoots and listen to me, shot doctor bullcrap. I think he could be a rotation player in the NBA. So I think he's good. What's the league average between 0 and 3 feet for point guards? That's a great question, Wes. I don't know the answer to that. Life cereal or Cheerios for breakfast? Oatmeal squares. Cereal is evil. It's just the most sugar-laden, terrible thing for you. I've taken it out of my life entirely, and I've lost 15 pounds in the off season, so maybe that's part of the reason. I hate eggs and overcook the hell out of them, but I eat them now every morning. But oatmeal squares when I'm deciding to be a cereal guy. David, from what you have seen and what you know about Dante and knowing that most draft decisions are based on potential, if the current Dante Exum we saw in Summer League was 19 years old and in the draft, where would you draft him? Oh, that's got a lot of pieces to it. The current Dante Exum we saw in Summer League. I don't know. Not well, that draft's not very good. That draft's not very good. Like, right? I mean, here's my biggest concern on Dante Exum. This is like a huge belief of mine. If you draft a player and he's not as good as you think he was going to be, you draft a player and he's not developing at the rate you think he should, take a look and see at the players that were drafted after him. So, for example, let's go to Trey Burke. After Trey Burke is C.J. McCollum, who's turned out to be a great player. But then Michael Carter-Williams, who's not a great player. Steven Adams, Kelly Olynyk, but those are big. Shabazz Muhammad, not a great player. Giannis, there were a lot of circumstances there. Lucas Nogueira, Dennis Schroeder, who's okay. Shane Larkin, who I think is basically out of the league. Sergei Karasev, who's out of the league. Tony Snell, who's turned out to be okay. Solomon Hill is, Reggie Bullock, who's out of the league. Maybe Trey Burke was drafted right at the right spot at 9, and C.J. McCollum is basically the case that everyone saw him as a point guard, and he switched to a shooting guard, and he's become good. And then you look above Trey Burke, and you're like, okay, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's okay, Ben McLemore's not, Nerlens Noel, we don't know, Alex Lynn is not. Wow, Cody Zeller, who people thought were insane to be drafted 4, was a great pick at 4. That's one of my big things that I do when I see a player that's not developing quite at the rate that you think. So that would be Dante. I look and I go, oh, Marcus Smart. Julius Randle. Nick Stauskas. Noah Vonleh. Alfred Payton. Doug McDermott. Dario Saric. Okay, Zach LaVine. Okay, but I just went 9, 7, 8 picks before I found a player who's really pretty good. Saric was unique in... We'll see how good he is. I don't think we really know. He shot 31% from 3 last year, and somehow just because he's on the Sixers, that's okay. Then Zach LaVine, who's pretty darn good. TJ Warren got us. Adrian Payne, who's kind of close to out of the league. Nurkic is fine. James Young is out of the league. Tyler Ennis, I think, is close to out of the league. Suddenly I look at Dante Exum, and Aaron Gordon's ahead of him. We don't know yet. So that's like my concern a little bit. On this whole idea of Dante's potential. I think he might have been picked in the right spot, and that draft might not have been what it is. So now let's go see if he can play. He's still crazy quick and has an elite level skill. Dave Shore, how are you? Paying players does not prevent this. Greed gets bigger. Yes or no? I'm not. Oh, he's talking about the college thing. Dave Shore, by the way, you can hear him on, I think, sidelines at ESPN. He was working the game the other day. I was listening to. He's big time. He's a big time, huge star. We're old enough. We've known each other for 20 years, and he worked with my wife at one point. I don't know the answer on collegiate athletics. Actually, I do know the answer on collegiate athletics. I don't know about. I think you got to try not to pay him. But I think you should give him a say. I think players should be able to major in basketball. I think they should be able to major in football. If you want to be a golf pro, you can go to a school and major in being a golf professional. I think they should be able to major in these things. Major in basketball. Okay, so that would include finance, coaching, physical performance, nutrition. But the fact of the matter is we take these football players and basketball players and we send them to school kind of. And we limit the classes they can take. They can't go take chemistry labs because that's afternoon practice. And we're not allowing them to really go to college and they're at all. I know there's like – I've learned recently that bunch of Division I schools, Utah, for example, has a nice brick wall between academic advisors and coaches so that the coaches can't dictate what classes the kids take, which is good. That's a move in the right direction. But the fact is players – like I can't take a chem lab and miss Tuesday and Thursday practices. Like you just can't do that. So we're not really letting them go to college. So if we're going to not really let them go to college, then why are they majoring in communications or – you know, whatever BS, bullcrap, easiest major they can have. Let's build the likelihood of most of these guys who play collegiate athletics is that they're going to come out and, if they really love football, try to work somewhere in the football world, which is coaching, strength and conditioning, nutrition, and all. So let's build majors that match in this realm. Why we're so damn scared of allowing people to work in the sports and athletic field, maybe it's broadcasting, that I don't understand why but that's not real college. We're not sending them to real college anyway. So let's figure it out. Let's give them public speaking classes. Give them nutrition class. I've said all these, right? You got the concept. I don't know why we don't do that. Who is the second best player to run the offense? Probably Joe Ingles. It's great. William, good question. Maybe Howell Neto. So small, though. Such a great kid. Did you listen to yesterday's interview? Do you not love him? Bucky Cash, could you talk about the players who have done that before, like you did last year? Like which of our players has started versus coming off the bench, NBA versus Europe, etc.? Oh, I love that. Thank you, Bucky. So this is my theory of guys have got to have done – I'll run through the NBA rosters at some point on this. Guys, rosters of players have to have done what you're asking them to do. So we've got some good, some bad. So – Rudy's done what he's being done. Derek has done what he's being asked to do. Ingles and Cephalosha, and particularly Cephalosha actually, has done more of what we're asking him to do. But Joe has, Joe actually, suddenly Joe started 26 games last year. So I would say Joe's a no. Unless we bring Joe off the bench, Joe is being asked to do something he has never been asked to do, which is night in and night out be a primary player with a spotlight on him and a scouting report. And Cephalosha, on the other hand, has started 81 games, I think, twice in his career, 80 games three times in his career, something like that. So you could flip those, and actually goes back to my argument that they've done this before. Cephalosha is also 33 years old. Rodney Hood is a no. He has not been asked to be the lead scorer or primary scorer on a team. And Rubio is a yes. So of our starting five, I would say that two of them are no's. That Joe Ingles is a no, and that Rodney Hood is a no. And then of our bench unit, Donovan's a no, so that's three. Jerebko, Joe Johnson, all yeses. Epe Udo's a yes. Dante Exum is probably a yes. He's kind of done this. So we have three guys who are in roles they've never had before. Usually they don't play their best in that position. I think that's an interesting one. And it's interesting that if you take Cephalosha and start him in Ingles and put him on the bench, you're down to – really, you're then kind of just down to one. I love that, Bucky. I'm going to work on that again. Thank you very much. Will our starting five at the beginning of the year be the same as at the end? No, I think it'll change throughout the year. Do you believe in the preseason hype of the 76ers, Vegas putting their line at 41.5? I have no idea what player Ben Simmons is. I have no idea or belief that Joel Embiid can be healthy for more than 40 games a year. So I would say, only reason I would say yes is because of the fact that the East sucks so bad and they play most of their games there. So that would be my thought. Brian, any chance the playoffs says any chance the playoff structure changes? No. I was in a league meeting. I pushed them on it. They showed a bunch of analytics that I didn't really buy into, but they clearly thought it out. They do not see the value of it. They see huge downside of having Portland playing Miami in the playoffs. They do not see the value of changing the playoff structure. The only one that I wonder a little bit on the playoff structure, but it doesn't really solve, is whether or not you do something where the bottom spots get mixed around so that 7 and 8 of the West and the East get thrown around and do different things with them. But then you still could end up with Portland playing Miami, and they think, you know, that one of the things they brought up was Portland plays Miami, the Lakers play the Clippers in the first round, then the winner of the two series play each other. It's totally unfair. One has not traveled at all, and the other, if that's their lineup of thinking, that's the way they're presenting it to us, that's pretty clear that they're not interested in this. At the same time, by the way, they went and showed us an entire thing about the lottery and how they needed to change it, and now they're pushing lottery reform. So it was very telling in that NBA broadcast meetings of what they thought was important. Are you underrating our potential offensive favors is healthy? 2 years ago, the dude dominated Davis, Cousins, etc. Yeah, I guess I got to really see him move well. I mean, he's moving better, but I'd like to see it for more than, you know, a day or two. So, yeah, maybe. Maybe I am. Do you know if we could watch games on streaming? I do not. I get asked this question a lot. I'm a radio guy. I suggest just listening to the radio. It's where the real artists work. No, the real artists are the guys in the truck and the broadcasters at TV. It's a much harder job. But that was fun. It is Locked On Jazz, brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group. Give Rob a call. He's a good dude. He'll talk to you about the Jazz, probably tell you about his bike riding. 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. Rob will give you family and friends pricing if you give him, tell him that Locked On Jazz called. 319-2250. It's Rob's cell phone. Like, just give him a call. He's a nice dude. If you need a friend to talk to today. 45 minutes in the books. What's wrong with us? Go back to work. Have a great day. It's Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.